By Line Audio.
Hello, my name is Adrian Goldberg, and welcome to the Byline Times podcast. The Byline Times, it's what the papers don't say, what radio doesn't report, and what telly doesn't tell you. This time, after five more people died in the Channel attempting to cross to the UK, one of them a seven-year-old girl, we're asking if the government's Rwanda scheme is a humane response and whether it will be effective. Rishi Sunak made it an article of faith to push the Rwanda bill through Parliament, despite previous objections by the European Court of Human Rights. Under the bill, migrants who arrive in the UK by boat will henceforth risk being sent to the East African state to have their asylum claims processed. And even if they are successful, they won't be allowed to return to the UK. 52,000 people are currently eligible for deportation under the plan. More legal challenges can be expected, though. The Rwanda bill is expected to cost £370 million over 5 years. We're joined by Leila Zada. Leila is the Executive Director of Rainbow Migration, which helps LGBTQI people through the asylum and migration system. She came to the UK as a child, as a refugee. And Amreen Qureshi, Research Fellow at the think tank, the IPPR. Leila, let's talk about your personal experience, if you don't mind. I know that might seem like a bit of a jump off when we're talking about the Rwanda bill and these five tragic deaths that we're reflecting on, but perhaps you can bring something of your own personal experience to bear to some of these sometimes very fevered discussions around the Rwanda bill.
What this new law and the treaty with Rwanda says to people like me and my family and other people that have rebuilt our lives in safety in the UK is that the government doesn't welcome us here. And that's really quite painful. I grew up in this country. I've studied in this country. I've worked in this country. And I have the right to vote. And to see the government in power passing laws like this, which go against the facts, which have been found by the Supreme Court, and passing a law that's instilling fear into the lives of many people is really hurtful for people like myself. And I acknowledge that I'm in a privileged position. I'm not one of the people at risk of being sent there. And it breaks my heart to think that other people will be denied the opportunity that me and my family had. And that today in this country, there's thousands of people who aren't going to be able to sleep tonight because they're so worried that they're going to be banished to a country they may never have heard of before and where they've got no connections whatsoever.
And what were the circumstances of your arrival here?
My mum and dad were politically active in Iran against a tyrannical regime there, and they had to flee. Had they not done, they probably would have been imprisoned, tortured, and certainly, I have no doubt in the case of my father, he would have been killed with or without a trial. They came to the UK because they had already lived here as students, so they knew this country. And my father had a brother here. So when they're having to flee the country that they grew up in, where most of their family were, of course, the place they wanted to come was the one other country where they'd lived before and where they had a relative, a sense of family still. And that's the reason why a lot of people want to seek safety in this country, because they speak the language or because they've got family connections. At Rainbow Migration, one of the people we worked with, for example, who is a gay man from the Caribbean, wanted to come to the UK because he had been rejected by his entire family except his father, and his father was living in the UK. So when he sadly had to flee his country of origin, he wanted to come here to be reunited with his father.
And Amreen, there are so many thousand people already in our migration system. There's a huge backlog in dealing with asylum claims. I mentioned at the top that there are 52,000 people who are eligible for deportation for Rwanda now that this bill has become law. Is there an argument that this will go some way at least to helping those people and reducing the logjam of asylum claims in this country?
Yeah, as you mentioned, there are a significant number of people that are currently in the asylum system. But actually, because of this bill that has been passed and the combination of this and the Illegal Migration Act, that actually there'll be the creation of a perma backlog. What that essentially means is that because Rwanda can't be scaled up, so there are serious capacity issues in terms of housing people in Rwanda, and also there will be legal challenges, there'll be issues on like how frequently can planes fly out, people will essentially be stuck in limbo. So any person that's come to the UK after March 2023, when the Illegal Migration Act came into force, there'll be some people of those that will be not eligible to stay in the UK, but they also can't be deported. So essentially, it's a scalability issue. Rwanda can't be scaled up, and therefore people will be stuck in limbo for a long period of time in subpar accommodation in the UK, and they won't have the right to stay in the UK or really rebuild their lives, especially after dealing with such traumatic events trying to come into the country. So really, it's not going to deal with the backlog. It's actually going to create a permanent backlog, if anything.
There are two questions, really, I want to explore. One is whether this is going to be an effective method of deterring the small boats crossing the channel. I'll just park that for a moment. Let's talk about the humanity of it. And I just wonder what your thoughts are on that, Amreen. The European Court of Human Rights has previously rejected the Rwanda bill. The bill was then redrafted to overcome some of the objections. And there's also been a new treaty between the UK and Rwanda. And if people are fleeing persecution, if they're fleeing terror, there is an argument that they will be grateful to be given a permanent home wherever that might be in safety, even if that's Rwanda rather than the UK.
I know that the bill is now called the Safety of Rwanda Bill, but just because you legislate and put in law books that something is safe, in reality, that doesn't actually make a country safe. There have been mounting concerns about the human rights record in Rwanda. There have been mounting concerns about whether people will be able to flourish if they are sent to Rwanda. They're not being given the choice of what country they can potentially settle in. So there has been a lot of criticism about the economic cost of this Rwanda policy, but we shouldn't forget the very human cost of this as well. We're essentially absconding our international responsibilities of protecting people. The UK has held a lot of pride in upholding human rights, but we're clearly not doing that if we are pushing for such punitive policies. And I think it's also important to note that research has always pointed towards the fact that deterrent tactics, pushing people away, has never been effective. So while the Prime Minister is promising that he'll be able to stop the boats with this policy, there is no evidence that that is going to happen. If anything, what the Home Office should focus on is actually opening up safe routes for people that want to exercise their right to asylum, and also work with European partners to better process asylum claims. Also fix our own house as well. We've got a broken asylum system. So a combination of those three things is a much better alternative than the Rwanda plan.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the number of people who are waiting for a decision on their asylum claim. To say that this is of the government's doing, the government has it well within its hands to make decisions in a timely way, and they have actively done the opposite. A couple of years ago, they introduced something called the inadmissibility rules, which means that they won't even look at your asylum claim for the first 6 months while they wait to see if they can return you to or send you to another country. And only a handful of people has that happened to. So they've automatically added 6 months to the waiting time. We have worked with people who've been waiting 3 or 4 years for a decision on their asylum claim. Most people have an interview, and we've seen cases where someone's had their interview and they've had to wait for a year for the decision on that interview. So this is the government's doing, and they need to sort it out rather than inflicting cruel measures, which Amreen said are not proven to work. And the government knows this. They themselves have said there is no evidence that deterrence measures work. And in terms of the human impact, I mean, I have a quote here from somebody we've worked with from Guatemala who said that it feels like they don't consider you human enough to provide you with a home, to give you a place to live. It feels like you're this problem that nobody wants to deal with. So you get tossed around from country to country, which gives you such a hopeless feeling. This is entirely caused by our government. And as Amreen said, the government could be creating safe routes, which would be cheaper than the Rwanda scheme and would allow people to live their lives in dignity. And the government wouldn't be inflicting more harm on people who've already fled bombs or who've already been imprisoned because they're a journalist, for example, or who've already escaped death at the hands of family for being LGBT.
An interesting debate for me, because my father came to this country as a German Jewish refugee, and without the sanctuary offered by this country during World War II, I would not be alive today. And in the aftermath of World War II, a new regime for asylum and migration was ushered in. There are those who say that that system was designed for a very different time than the one that we are now in, that the system really isn't set up to deal with the number of people fleeing to Western European countries, and in our case, the UK. How do you react to that?
The UNHCR, who is the UN's body on refugees, they are still upholding this convention, and they're the authority we should really be listening to on this matter. Humans have migrated throughout our history, and this convention has been in place for 70 years and saved thousands, if not millions, of lives, including that of my family and that of yours, Adrian. It is still working well. The problem we have is governments shirking their responsibility. And this convention was there exactly to encourage governments to accept their responsibilities, because nobody wants to see mass exoduses of the kind that we had during the time of World War II. And we all know of the story of Anne Frank's family, who was sadly denied permission to travel to the USA, where their lives could have been saved. And that's why we've got the Refugee Convention, to try to continue protecting lives to this day and going ahead.
Yes, I would add to that and say that actually international obligations such as the Refugee Convention of 1951 still holds relevance. Conflicts are still happening, war is still happening, people are still fleeing persecution in 2024, and that shouldn't be forgotten or even belittled. So it's more important now than ever for governments to uphold their global responsibility for allowing people to exercise their right to asylum, which is something that any person should be able to do. And I think it's also important to note that most of the time when people are displaced and are fleeing countries, they will go to their neighbouring countries first. People don't make that dangerous journey across Europe out of choice. They're doing it out of desperation. And most people that are coming specifically to the UK are coming because they have family ties, they know the language, or there are large diaspora communities in the UK. So that's why they're coming. And they should have every right to be able to do that.
On the question of deterrence, though, I mean, you say that there's no evidence, but surely word of mouth will get round, won't it? If people arrive in the UK and they are sent in some numbers to Rwanda, won't those people who may well feel that they have some kind of claim on the UK, or who feel that they would be at home here, won't they simply say, well, I'm not going to go to the UK because I will end up in Rwanda? Isn't that kind of a common sense argument?
Evidence has shown over many years that deterrence measures don't work. Successive governments in the UK have tried to implement deterrence, and it has had no effect. For example, under the Labour government, they removed people's right to work, but people still came. People still to this day in this country don't realise that they're not allowed to work if they're seeking asylum. Similarly, if they're not allowed to work, the amount they can live off that they're given has remained between 35 to about £45 a week for the last 20 years. Again, people don't realise how much poverty people are living in. If deterrence measures worked, the government wouldn't have had to pass three bills in the last couple of years. We had the Nationality and Borders Act, we had the Illegal Migration Act, and now this latest law about Rwanda. If deterrence measures worked, the government wouldn't be going to these extremes.
Amrin, you talked about the UK needing to create safe routes for migrants to this country. What would that exactly look like?
They can look like several different methods of safe routes. So, for example, we could potentially pilot out a humanitarian visa scheme. That could be where when someone is trying to flee their country, they can apply for a visa so that they can enter the country legally and be able to claim asylum in a safe method so that they're not making that dangerous journey to cross the channel. But also there are things that are already in place that just need expanding. Like, for example, the family reunion rules. That was something that people heavily relied on. If they had family members in the UK, they used that route to reunite with their families. But that was under the Dublin regulations when we were part of the EU. Now that we're not part of the EU, people can't really use that route. So we need a lot more flexibility in existing routes as well. And we've also seen in the past couple of years, there have been bespoke humanitarian schemes like the Ukrainian scheme or the Afghan scheme. There have been some critique about the effectiveness of those schemes, but at least there were options offered to people that were trying to flee war and persecution to come to the UK in a safe manner where they don't have to rely on people smugglers or get on a boat. So there are very simple ways that the government can expand or start new routes. And it's proven that if they do that, it will divert people from making those dangerous crossings. And it means that people's lives aren't put in danger and then they can exercise their right to be with their families or to claim asylum and be able to do that with dignity. That would essentially stop the boats, which is something that the Prime Minister has been promising over the past few months. Just applying safe routes would be an effective way to stop the boats.
And we do not see Ukrainians coming on boats precisely because they have safe routes to get here. And we know that thousands of Ukrainians are now living safely in this country and none of them have had to risk their lives to get here.
The opposition in the Lords, which the government finally overcame, was led by Labour peers. This is clearly a flagship Conservative policy, a flagship policy of the Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak. How confident are you that Labour under Keir Starmer would reverse the Rwanda bill?
I think it's important that Labour thinks about if they do come into power, what will be in their in tray, what will be the first thing that they need to tackle if they end up in power. And I think it's important that they recognise that if certain elements of the Rwanda bill aren't addressed or reversed, then actually the situation is just going to become much harder and the immigration system will just continue to gather more flaws and become more and more problematic.
Leila, you represent LGBTQI plus people. I just want to reflect for a moment on the plight of those people and how this bill and this act as it now is will impact upon them.
I can use the words of another one of our service users who's a gay man from Nigeria. His community tried to kill him when they found out he was gay. And when he received a letter saying that he might be sent to Rwanda, he couldn't sleep for days because his heart was beating so fast. Thankfully, he has been granted refugee status in this country, so he can now stay. But he remains traumatized simply by receiving that letter and the idea that he might be sent away to this other country thousands of miles away. And we have to bear in mind that the government itself says on its website that LGBT people are abused in Rwanda, including by local authorities. So this is what the government itself has said, and this is the same government that has passed a law to say that Rwanda is safe. The government has effectively passed a law to say that pizza is a vegetable. That's what they've done. And this service user of ours from Nigeria, what he would tell the government is, I would like them to consider the experiences of LGBTQI plus people. Most of them don't have the intention to leave, but they have to run for their lives. People are afraid of being sent to a place where they fear for their lives. We have supported people from Rwanda at Rainbow Migration, and we are currently supporting lesbians from Uganda, which is next to Rwanda. The thought of being sent to the country neighbouring the one where they have fled, where they are easily within reach of their family, is absolutely terrifying. And it's not what any of us in this country would want for our loved ones and for our friends. And this government is really acting against what this public really believes in, which is a sense of compassion for people who have had to flee such awful violence.
Amreen, politically, the government has created, many would say deliberately, a potential wedge issue between it and the Labour Party ahead of the next election. It will become perhaps one of those polarising culture war issues. Do you support the deportations to Rwanda or not? And we know that they will be cheered on in that by right-wing newspapers and elements, at least, of the Conservative Party. What would you say to those people who are supportive of this measure?
I think it's fair to say that public opinion in general is favourable towards immigration. So research that we did 2 years ago showed that actually public attitudes towards immigration is warming over time. And so polling around the Rwanda plan has never been very favourable in general. And I think that as a nation, we would want to make sure that we continue to uphold our human rights framework. So I think it's important to recognise that. And even though it is a wedge issue, Labour needs to recognise that they need to take responsibility to oppose any inhumane acts that become permissible under the Rwanda Act. And they need to understand that should they come into power in the next election, that actually they need to make sure that reforms are immediately made, because if they don't, then they'll have a bigger problem on their hands further down the line when the perma backlog increases, or when there are mounting legal challenges, or when the cost of this plan spirals out of control. So whatever is done after the next election is done immediately, because there's a serious economic cost, but more importantly, there's a huge human cost attached to this plan.
Amreen, thank you. Amreen Qureshi from the IPPR, a research fellow. Thanks also to Leila Zada from Rainbow Migration. I'm Adrian Goldberg, and this has been the Byline Times podcast, produced in Birmingham by me and Harvey White. If you want to support our work on the Byline Times podcast, giving voice to people who are not always heard on mainstream media, then do head over to bylinetimes.com. That's our website, where you'll find some fantastic breaking news stories, but more importantly in this context, the opportunity to take out a subscription to the Byline Times, which is our wonderful monthly newspaper, which features the best of our online offerings and articles that you can't read anywhere else. So do head over to bylinetimes.com and take out a subscription. This is a We Bring Audio production for the Byline Times. We'll see you again very soon. Thanks for listening. Cheers now. Bye-bye.